on slide 18, I'm going to backtrack a little bit to make sure that we understand the basics. So on slide 18, we have a graph, and we have $5, and it says small d equals MR equals AR. Now, how do we determine that the market price is $5 here? The market, right? The market. The market is demand and supply. Now, what we've got here is a firm that's part of a perfectly competitive market, and the best example of perfectly competitive market would be something in the agriculture. So let's say that this is the market price for potatoes. So you've got a downward sloping demand curve for potatoes, the market demand, upper sloping supply. The intersection will be the market price. This also is small d. Now, what does a small d stand for? Now, this is review, right? I'm backtracking on this. What is small d? Yes, that's the demand for one firm. Why is the demand curve horizontal at the market price? So you've got to understand why these curves look as they do, these graphs and these tables. There's concepts here. See, this is called the principles of economics, right? And so you've got to understand the principles behind these things, because only then can you really have a true understanding. So why is a firm's demand curve horizontal at the market price, at least in the short run? And this is a short run analysis.
Everything they bring to the market.
Yes, that's the answer. Because a firm can sell everything it brings to market, provided that it sells at the market price. Now, when we say everything, see, what we've got here is that at that $5, as we go across horizontally, we'll say that goes on forever, right? See, the demand curve is horizontal at that $5. See, it goes on forever. Okay, so the point here is that if a firm is part of a perfect competitive market, can sell everything they bring to market at the market price, then the only demand curve that would represent that would be a horizontal line at the market price. Now, if this firm charges more than $5, how many units will it sell? Zero. So why should anyone buy from this firm at a higher price if they can buy from hundreds or even thousands of others at a lower price? Exactly the same product, because in perfect competition, we cannot differentiate our product from everyone else's, right? A potato is a potato. What this says is that if we charge a price more than $5, well, demand is always below where we're at. See, that says that no matter what, we're going to sell zero units. All right, now this $5 also represents marginal revenue. Now, why does it represent marginal revenue? It's the revenue received on the last unit. So why is this $5 equal marginal revenue? Yeah, every time we sell a unit, how much are we adding to our total revenue? $5. So $5 equals marginal revenue. Now, this also equals average revenue. And how come? Because we're selling every unit for the same price. So if we take our total revenue and divide by quantity, what will we always get back to? The price. So average revenue equals $5. So there's four things equal here. $5 is the market price, the firm's short-run demand curve, marginal revenue, and average revenue. How do we know that this firm will produce at 12 units? How do we know that profits are maximized or losses may be minimized at 12 units? Now, when I ask you a question, how many units are we going to produce to maximize your profit or minimize your losses, immediately, what should pop into your mind? MR equals MC. That's the answer. That's always the answer. Where does MR equal MC here? At the intersection at 12 units, right? If you look at the marginal revenue curve, which is the horizontal line, you look at marginal cost curve, that U-shaped red curve, and they intersect at point E, and so at point MR equals MC, you go down to your horizontal axis, and you come out at 12 units. So that says that if we produce 12 units, we'll either maximize the profit or minimize the losses. Now, in this case, how do we know that we are maximizing profits and not minimizing losses?
So that average
revenue is greater than the average. Exactly. Because our average revenue is greater than our average total cost. See, point E is average revenue. And point A is average cost. So that vertical distance between E and A is what? See, our average revenue, E, is greater than our average cost, A. So we know this is a case of profit because our revenues are greater than our costs. But now, what is that vertical distance represent between E and A?
Profit off each unit.
Yeah, profit off each unit. Or we may call it average profit. The distance between E and A is our average profit because it's the difference between average revenue and average cost. See, average, average, average. We're comparing two averages. That is the width of this rectangle. The length of this rectangle is number of units. In this case, it's 12. And in geometry, you learn that if you multiply the width times the length of a rectangle, what do you get? Area. So the area of this rectangle here that's represented in a purple color is our total profit at our point of profit maximization. Okay, so let me move ahead here. Let's look at this another situation. Here's another graph. Got a market price here of $3. And we have our U-shaped average total cost curve, U-shaped marginal cost curve, U-shaped average variable cost curve. Those curves are all U-shaped because of the law of diminishing returns. How many units are we going to produce here to maximize profit or minimize losses? And how do we know it's 10? What's always the answer? How many units? What's the answer? MR equals MC. MR equals MC is always the answer. Come on, the question's always the same and the answer's always the same. Where does MR equal MC? At 10 units. You go where MR equals MC, you go down to the horizontal axis, you come out at 10 units. Tip I gave you the other day was that once you find where MR equals MC and you draw that vertical line, then the answers to all questions are found on that vertical line. So how do we know that this is a case of loss minimization rather than profit maximization? Because at 10 units, average total cost is greater than average revenue. That vertical distance between your average revenue curve and your average total cost curve represents what? It's average loss. Comparing two averages, so our answer would be an average. Revenue minus average cost is either average profit or average loss. In this case, it's average loss because our costs are greater than our revenues. Our average cost is greater than our average revenues. Now, we're producing 10 units here, so this rectangle that's shown in a brown color represents total loss. The length of that rectangle is number of units, which is 10. The width is average loss. And the width times the length gives us the area, which would represent total loss. All right, now that we are making a loss, we have a third question. And what is... Now you can come in. See, now what are we... Okay, we're making a loss. Now what decision do we want to make? You see, remember, microeconomics is all about what? decision making. We learn tools, understand principles, in order to make correct decisions. We just found out that no matter how many units we produce, we're going to make a loss. We also found out that if we produce 10 units, at least we will minimize our losses. We'll lose less money at 10 units than any other unit. But now that we're making a loss, what should be our next question? You're making a loss. No matter what you do, you're making a loss. What should you be concerned about now? Yes, whether you want to stay open or close down. Exactly right. Now, in this case, what do you do? Do you stay open or do you close down? Well, now look at this graph. Looking at this graph, see, you should be able to look at this graph and say, oh, it's obvious to me that what? How do we know that this is a case of stay open and not close down?
In this case, your average variable cost is $250. But your profit per unit is $3, so that's also covering additional fixed costs.
Oh, I'm not sure, but you're on the right track because the answer does. The answer is all about fixed costs. See, the distance between our average total cost curve and our average revenue curve is what?
Dollar.
But okay, yeah, it is a dollar, and that dollar represents what?
Average loss.
Now, what is the vertical distance between our average variable cost curve and our average total cost curve at 10 units? But what is $1.50? What does that represent? No, not our fixed cost, but our average fixed cost. Any vertical distance between your average variable cost curve and your average total cost curve is average fixed cost. Why? Because average variable plus average fixed equals average total. Looking at just 10 units, because that's the only number of units that we're concerned about here, correct? Because that's where MR equals MC. Looking at that vertical line at 10 units, which distance is greater, average loss or average fixed cost? Average fixed cost. Therefore, what that tells us is that if we close down, we'll lose more money than if we stay open. So, this is a stay open case. We're gonna if we continue to operate, what this says to us is that we'll lose less money than if we closed down and had to pay our fixed costs, because our fixed costs are greater than our losses. This whole line of reasoning, of course, assumes what? I mean, what kind of analysis is this? Short run. And in the short run, what is the difference between a short run and the long run in one word?
Capacity.
See, in a short run, we cannot change our capacity to produce. Therefore, in the short run, we have fixed costs. See, are there any fixed costs in the long run? No, in the long run, all costs are variable. But in the short run, we have fixed costs. So in this case, we have fixed costs, so we always compare our losses with our fixed costs to determine whether we should stay open or close down. You see, this is the only reason why we have an average variable cost curve. See, notice in slide 18, when we were talking about profit maximization, we didn't have an average variable cost curve. How come? Well, because we didn't need one. See, we're making a profit, so it's a no-brainer that we're going to stay open, right? But now in this case, it's a case of loss minimization rather than profit maximization. now we have this additional question to answer. Do we stay open or close down? But in order to answer the question, we need our average variable cost curve. Because with an average variable cost curve, and of course with our average total cost curve, we can see at a glance what our average fixed cost is. Okay, let's move on ahead then. Let's see. We talked about this last time, right? Why our marginal cost curve is our firm short-run supply curve. But why is our marginal cost curve, which lies above our average variable cost curve, this firm short-run supply curve? The supply curve shows us how many units we're going to produce at various prices. At P5, how many units are we going to produce to maximize your profit or minimize your losses? Q5. Now, where's I don't see MR here. Where's MR? Where's marginal revenue? I mean, I see a big MC, but I don't see MR anywhere. And how do I know it's P5? Because price equals marginal revenue. See, on the test, you have to know those four things are equal in perfect competition because you may be given one, but not the other three. But you need one of the other three to answer the questions. So you have to know, marginal revenue is not listed here, but prices are listed, so I know what MR is at these different prices. Now, see, this is five graphs imposed on one page. So what we're saying here is that if the market price for P5, then we know that MR is P5, and MR equals MC at Q5 units. If the market price were P4, then MR would be P4 at this lower price, and MR equals MC at Q4 units. And if the market price were P3, then MR would be P3 at this lower price, and MR equals MC at Q3 units. So what is the marginal cost curve showing us in conjunction with our marginal revenue curve? It's showing us how many units we're going to produce at various prices. Now, is that not the same thing as a supply curve? Yeah, that's exactly what a supply curve shows us. Now, why don't we include that portion which lies below our average variable cost curve as part of our supply curve? See, at the price, why is price P2 a unique price? What's so special about P2? We could go up to P4. Let's go up to P4 because that's another unique price. What kind of profit are we making at price P4? We are making a normal profit. Now, how do we know that we're making a normal profit at P4? P4, average revenue, equals average cost. See, if you look at your average... Now, where's average... I don't see AR here. Where's... At P4, I mean, where is average revenue? Well, AR is P4. How do we know it's P4? Well, because we got four things equal here, right? The market price, marginal revenue, average revenue, firm short-run demand curve. See, all those four are equal at the market price. At P4, you'll notice that average revenue equals average cost. Now, if average revenue equals average cost, that means that we're making a zero economic profit. If our revenues equals our cost, we're making zero economic profit, and by definition, we are making exactly a normal profit. How can we say that we are making a normal profit if our revenues equals our costs? I mean, does that sound right? That if total revenue equals total cost, that we are making a normal profit? Why do we count normal profit as part of our cost data? Because what is the definition of normal profit? What's the difference between normal profit and economic profit? See, we got three kinds of profits here. We got normal profit, economic profit, and accounting profit. Those are three different profits. So what's the difference between normal profit and economic profit? I mean, this goes back to the last chapter, right? I mean, this is old stuff here. Normal profit is the minimum amount of money that will induce a business owner to continue operating the business. See, what normal profit is a certain amount of money whereby the business owner would say, well, if I don't make at least this amount of money, I'm going to do something else. And the reason they go do something else is what Miranda mentioned, is the opportunity cost. So that's the reason behind it. But normal profit says, well, I got to make at least this amount of money, this amount of profit, or if I don't, I'll go do something else. That amount of money becomes a necessary expense of operating a business, because otherwise the business owner will go do something else. Now, what is economic profit? Economic profit is any money made above and beyond a normal profit. If total revenue equals total cost, and we're including normal profit as part of our cost data, then when total revenue equals total cost, by definition, that means that we are exactly making a normal profit and a zero economic profit. Let's look at this graph again. What is the case at P2? Why is P2 a very significant price? Or closed down. See, at P2, our losses equal our fixed costs. So at P2, it makes no difference if we stay open or closed down. We'll lose the same amount of money either way. Now, if we go below P2, what's the case? Now our losses exceed our fixed costs, so below P2, we make the decision to close down. Now, if we close down, is the supply curve relevant to us? No, we're not supplying anything, so supply curve is irrelevant below P2. And that's why below P2, you'll notice that our marginal cost curve is a dotted line, because we're saying, well, now below P2, there is no supply curve. So our firm short-run supply curve is only our marginal cost curve, which lies above our average variable cost curve. Now, any questions about this? Everybody understand it, right? I mean, if you just look at it, think about it, it just makes sense. Please don't try to cram anything into your brain on this stuff. It won't work. You just got to look at it and you got to say, oh, well, sure. Well, that's sure. That makes sense. Of course, in order to do that, you have to know the definitions. And you have to have some working knowledge of the principles. That's why they call us the principles of economics, right? Because we're learning the principles. Okay. Well, again, we're still on a review here. See, here just a little bit more practice, although that's not really what this graph is all about, but here's another graph $5. Now, how do we know, this is slide 27, how do we know on this graph in slide 27 that we will produce 12 units? What is always the answer? How many units? What's the answer? MR equals MC. So where does MR equal MC? At 12 units. Now, how do we know that this is a case of profit maximization rather than loss minimization? Because at 12 units, what? Come on now.
The average revenue is
Because your average revenue is greater than your average cost. So we know that this is a case of profit maximization. Now, what are our profits at this point of profit maximization? Rhino, what in dollars and cents? What's our profit at this at our point of profit maximization? Huh? No. Now a dollar is our average profit, but what is our total profit? No. Well, okay. Yeah. The profit is the length times the width, and the length is 12, and the width is 1, so 12 times 1 would be 12. So our profit is $12. At a point of profit maximization, our profit is $12. Okay, let's see. What is the industry short-run supply curve? A curve that indicates the quantity all firms in the industry supply at each price in the short run. Now this is, again, it's a review. And here we have a supply curve for firm A. Here we got a supply curve for firm B. Here we have a supply curve for firm C. So what is the industry's supply curve if all we've got is three firms in the industry? It's the summation of the individual firms' supply curves. And so S is aggregate supply. So we've got supply curve for firm A, supply curve for firm B, supply curve for firm C. We take the aggregation of those three supply curves and we get our aggregate supply, or we could call it our industry supply. That's the difference between an individual supply curve and the industry supply curve. Actually, it wouldn't be aggregate supply. This would be the supply curve for the industry. Aggregate supply would really be the supply curve for the whole economy. And this isn't the supply curve for the whole economy. This is really the supply curve for the industry. So I was wrong on using the word aggregate. Okay, so what this shows us here is that we've got a downward sloping supply demand curve for this market. Now, you see, what does the demand curve for the individual firm look like? It's horizontal at the market price. But now, why is the industry's demand curve downward sloping? I mean, the individual firm's demand curve, at least short-run demand curve, is horizontal at the market price, but if you look at the whole industry, we've got a downward sloping demand curve here. Why is that? You see, if you were a potato farmer, when you bring your potatoes to market, you're going to have to sell at the market price, correct? But now if you look at the industry demand curve for potatoes, plural, for the whole market, as the price of potatoes goes up, what are people going to do? Substitute. See, they'll substitute something else for those potatoes. So as the price goes up, the quantity demanded will go down, right? And as the price goes down, people will say, well, we want to buy more. So the quantity demanded goes up. Therefore, the industry's demand curve is downward sloping. And that's why we have a capital D here too, by the way, right? See, the demand curve for the firm was a small d, but this is a capital D, which says that, well, this is the demand curve for the industry. Okay? Now, the supply curve is upward sloping, and how do we get this industry supply curve? Well, what this Greek symbol means, and to the left of MC on slide 33 here, is the summation. This says that the industry supply curve is the summation of all the firm's short run marginal cost curves. And then the intersection of those two is what determines the market price. Okay, what is economic profit in the long run? In the long run. Now, if I don't say anything, what time frame must you assume I'm talking about? The short run. But by the rules of the game, if I want to talk about the long run, then I have to say, in the long run, such and such and such and such. Well, that's what I'm doing here. I'm saying, in the long run. And we are talking about what kind of industry here? Perfect competition. You've got to remember that all that we're talking about here is only true in a perfectly competitive market. If this were some other type market, then a lot of things that we're saying here would not hold true. But if they do hold true, because we are talking about a perfectly competitive market, which has a definition to it. There's a certain characteristics that have to hold true in order for a market to be perfectly competitive. And we're saying here what these conditions hold true. Now, what is that condition that holds true in a perfectly competitive market that says that in the long run, the equilibrium price is where normal profits are made? Or exactly zero economic profits. What characteristic? Yes, exactly. The characteristic is the easy entry, easy exit characteristic. See, the point here is that if economic profits were being made, what is going to happen? More firms will enter the industry. Why? Because they'll say, hey, those guys are making an economic profit, and we want to enter into that industry to partake in those economic profits. And that's easy to do because in this industry, it's very easy to enter into this type market. Now, once more firms enter the industry, what happens to our industry supply curve? It increases. It shifts to the right. And if the industry supply curve shifts to the right, what happens to our market price? Goes down, right? Now, if our market price goes down, the supply curve shifts to the right, price goes down, supply curve shifts to the right, price goes down. Eventually, what's going to happen here? Come on, eventually, what's going to happen? Okay, we start off by saying that the average firm in this industry is making an economic profit. But that meant that more firms will enter the industry, supply curve shifts to the right, price goes down, supply curve shifts to the right, price goes down. Okay, now what's going to happen eventually? Yeah, eventually, we're not going to be making an economic profit anymore. Now, in the economy, when things change, they don't get to a certain point like the equilibrium and just stop. Because it's always a flow situation because of time lags. See, supply shifts to the right, supply shifts to the right, supply shifts to the right, price goes down, price goes down, price goes down. Well, at some point, we're going to fly right through where normal profits are being made, and we're going to get to the point where losses are being made, where at least we are making less than a normal profit. on the average. The average firm now is making less than a normal profit. Now what's going to happen?
Easy exit.
Easy exit. Some of those firms will leave the industry because they're making less than a normal profit. And as they leave the industry, what happens to our industry supply curve? It shifts back to the left, correct? And as it shifts back to the left, what happens to the market price? It goes up. Now, as price goes up, price goes up, price goes up, eventually what's going to happen? Back to an economic profit. Now, once we're making an economic profit, what's going to happen? Economic, yeah, easy entry. Some firms will enter back into the industry. Supply shifts to the right. Eventually, those economic profits are erased. Losses are made. Firms leave the industry. Supply shifts to the left. Price goes up. Eventually, economic profits are once again being made. More firms enter. And where does this story end? It never ends. That's the nature of a perfectly competitive market. Now, as price goes up and price goes down, we're making economic profits. We're making less than an economic. We're making less than a normal profit, and then price goes up and economic profits are restored. At what point are we tending toward in this process? We are tending toward a point of normal profit. That's our equilibrium over the long run. In the long run, in a perfectly competitive market, the equilibrium is where the average firm is making a normal profit.
So
in any perfectly competitive market, and remember, we are only talking here about a perfectly competitive market. So if all those conditions hold true, then over time, and maybe like over a year or over 2 years, see, there's time lags here, but you know, over a period of time, this is what happens. See, it's like at what time of the year does a farmer decide what to plant? I mean, if a farmer's got X number of acres and you can grow different things on this X number of acres, then what are you going to decide to grow? I mean, can you grow multiple crops, I mean different crops on this acreage? Sure you can, right? I mean, you've got land. Well, what can you grow on that land? Well, lots of different things, right? I mean, how many vegetables are there? Lots of different vegetables, right? Your land is, it's good for this crop and it's good for that crop and it may be good for 100 different crops. So what are you going to do to decide what to plant? Well, what most farmers do is they look at last year and they say, well, what crops were doing good last year? I mean, what crops were bringing good profits last year? Oh, corn was bringing good profits. So I'm gonna plant my acreage this year in corn. I mean, maybe last year I planted cabbage, but I'm not gonna plant cabbage this year. I'm gonna plant corn this year because that's what was making the money last year. See? Well, if a lot of farmers are doing this, they're looking at last year and they're saying, well, boy, those farmers that were planting corn, they're really making a lot of money. They made a lot of money last summer, so I'm going to grow corn this year. Well, what happens to the industry supply curve for corn? It shifts to the right. See, last year, economic profits are being made, but now, because a lot of farmers looked at that and said, well, we're going to plant corn, and the following fall, once we harvest the corn, we got a whole lot more corn than we did last year. Supply curve has now shifted to the right compared to last year. And what's happened to the market price? It goes down. See, if you were really, a smart farmer, What I mean, how would you make a decision what to plant this year? Yeah, you look at exactly. You look last summer and say, now what crops we're making, we're losing the most money. Well, that's the crop I want to plant this year. Now, how many farmers do you think never learned this? I mean, how many farmers do you think could farm for 40 years and always make decisions of what to plant in the spring based on what crops made the most money last summer? They'll do it year after year. That's why so many farmers, over the long run, they'll make just a normal profit. Because that's what farmers do. Okay? Okay, so let's see. What is our economic profit in the long run? Zero. Because in the long run, the equilibrium is where a normal profit's being made. Okay, here is long-run equilibrium for the firm, and what we've got here, LRAC stands for long-run average cost. ATC is average total cost. MC is marginal cost. We've got a price here, small d, firm short-run demand curve. How do we know that we're going to produce Q units? Because intersection of what? Yes, that's always the answer, right? How many units? MR equals MC. Where does MR equal MC? At Q units, at point E. Now, again, I don't see an MR here anywhere. I mean, there's no MR. So where is MR? P. Is MR equals P. Okay, now, what's happening at price P? What kind of profit are we making at price P? Huh? Normal. And how do we know that we're making a normal profit? Because at point E, what's equal? And come on now. Exactly. Right. Because at point E, average revenue equals average cost. So by definition, we are making a normal profit. Now again, I don't see AR here anywhere. I mean, there's no AR. So where is AR? Huh? P, because average revenue equals P. So average revenue equals average cost at point E. So what this graph is showing us, this graph is on slide 35. What this graph is showing us is where profits are made in the long run, because this is our long run average cost curve. See, ALRAC, long run average cost. And what this is showing us is that the equilibrium in the long run is where average revenue equals average cost. Okay, so this is the long run equilibrium for the industry, and again here what we've got is a downward sloping demand curve and our upward sloping supply curve, and the intersection of course is our market price, which is determined by the equilibrium price. Okay, what is the long-run industry supply curve? A curve that shows the relationship between price and quantity supplied once firms fully adjust to any change in market demand. See, the long run, we're allowing these adjustments to take place. What is an increasing cost industry? An industry that faces higher per unit production cost as industry output expands in the long run. Now your author goes into an increasing cost industry, a constant cost industry, and a declining cost industry. I put some of this information in an appendix to these slides because I'm not going to go into the other two type markets, because the most common market is an increasing cost industry, which says that as we increase production in the long run, our cost on the average increase. See, a constant cost industry would say that as we increase production, our over the long run, our costs stay the same. And a decreasing cost industry would say that as we increase production over the long run, our average costs actually decline. Now, those things are possible. I mean, it's possible for us to increase production and our costs to stay the same. It's also possible that we can increase production and our costs on the average will go down. But those are few and far between. I mean, those are very much rare. So what we're going to really concentrate on here is what's true 95% of the time, and that is an increase in cost industry. Usually, as we increase production, then our costs will increase. Now, what is the shape of the long-run industry supply curve in an increase in cost industry? It's upward sloping, just as we showed previously. See, it looks different for the other two situations. For a constant cost industry, the supply curve would be horizontal, and for a decrease in cost industry, our supply curve would actually be downward sloping. But again, we're not going to dwell on those two possibilities. What is production efficiency? The condition that exists when output is produced with the least cost combination of inputs given the state of technology. See, how do we know that we are operating at the most efficient level possible? How would you explain that to me? I mean, if I said to myself, I am operating at the most efficient level possible, how would I know that? But how do I know that? Yeah, you're right, but how do I know that? Because, well, now, I am operating at the most efficient level possible if I'm in a situation where if I did something different, I would make less money. Now, is that not true? I mean, I'm doing it a certain way. Now, if I did it any other way, I would make less money. Now, if that's true, then where am I? I'm at the most efficient level possible. See, that's a definite answer to a specific question. And that's what this is telling us here. What is allocative efficiency? Now, there are different types of efficiency. Allocative efficiency is the condition that exists when firms produce the output that is most preferred by consumers. See, first we were looking at efficiency in terms of, well, am I operating at the most efficient level possible? But there's another way of looking at efficiency. Another way of looking at efficiency is the system providing us with the goods and services that we prefer the most? If the system is providing us with those goods and services that we prefer the most, then we are operating at the most allocative efficiency. See, what would be example, a very current example of a system where we would not be allocative efficient? I mean, y'all know what happened 3 days ago when the President of the United States fired the President of General Motors? I mean, that's never been done in this country's history, where the government actually takes control over a company and fires the head CEO. Now,
award for, like, the player of the year, the NCAA. Was he not?
well, I don't know about. We're talking about a guy named Wagner, who was the head CEO of General Motors.
Yeah.
Oh, well, he might have, but he's no longer president of. Yeah, he was ousted. Now, of course, when he was ousted, General Motors gave him a check for $20 million. So I mean, it's not like he's, you know, destitute or nothing. But the point I'm making is that the government, has gained control over this country's largest automobile company. Now, what is one of the objectives? Now, this is another. I'm not sure if we passed law or not, but it's going to be passed. If we haven't, it's going to be passed very shortly. And it's a law that says that we're going to force mandate that General Motors manufacture more fuel efficient green type cars. But now, why didn't General Motors do that before? Yeah, because consumers weren't buying those small cars. They were buying the bigger SUVs, right? But now the government says, well, we think that it's best for this country and for the environment that people buy more fuel-efficient cars. So we're going to produce more fuel-efficient cars. Now, how are we going to convince people to buy these cars? Come on now, what's government going to do? What's the incentive? I mean, what's the government been doing for the past 2 or 3 months? They've been throwing trillions of dollars around, right? I mean, they've created trillion dollars worth of money, and they practically dropped them, money from the airplanes. I mean, so what are they going to do? If you buy one of these fuel-efficient cars from General Motors, they're going to write you a check for $4,000 or $5,000 as an incentive to buy these smaller cars. Now, what point am I making here? Is that allocative efficient? No, it's not. See, if it were allocative efficient, would we have to pay people $4,000 or $5,000 to buy these cars? No. See, the SUVs were allocative efficient because the system was producing those things that people wanted. But now we're going to produce things that people don't want. See that, and therefore we're moving away from allocative efficiency to something other than that. See, less than allocative efficient. But when you do that, you have to modify the system. In this case, you've got to give a $4,000 or $5,000 rebate. You see how that works? Okay, so in a free market, see the point that's being made here, because this is really a chapter in perfect competition, and the General Motors and automobile business is not perfectly competitive. But what this slide is pointing out here is that in a perfectly competitive market, we allow the market to operate without any hindrance, then a perfectly competitive market will be allocative efficient. See, the market will give us those things that we want. Now, when we move away from a market system, and we try to strong arm it to give us a different result than it would otherwise, then see, we're certainly not talking about perfect competition or even a free market. So what is the marginal cost of each good equal to? The marginal benefit consumers derive from that good. In other words, equilibrium is where marginal benefit equals marginal cost. That's one way of looking at allocative efficiency. When marginal, at what point are we operating at the most efficient level possible? At what point are we operating where we have maximum allocative efficiency, where marginal benefit equals marginal cost. How do we know? Okay, what I'm saying here is that the equilibrium is where marginal benefit equals marginal cost. How do you prove that that's an equilibrium in a free market, perfectly competitive industry? How do you prove that any point is an equilibrium? Well, how do you prove that? Say, if marginal benefit is greater than marginal cost, would we produce that last unit, or perform that whatever it is we're doing here, our production? If marginal benefit is greater than marginal cost, we'll go ahead and produce it, right? And then we go to the next unit. And we say, well, if marginal benefit is greater than marginal cost, we'll produce the next unit. Okay, then we go to the next unit. If marginal benefit is greater than marginal cost, we keep on producing as long as marginal benefit is greater than marginal cost. But now once we get to the point where marginal benefit is less than marginal cost, what do we do? Oh, no, we're not going to produce that last unit, right? We're not going to perform that last function. So at what point are we tending toward? In order to be allocative efficient, we're tending toward a point where marginal benefit equals marginal cost, which is what this is telling us. Okay, what is consumer surplus? The difference between the maximum amount that a consumer is willing to pay for a given quantity of a good and what the consumer actually pays. Now, we have talked about this concept before. Let me go back here. The example I gave you before was when I once bought a hat. Remember that? And I said, I've been looking for this hat, and I found one that's just what I've been looking for, and the price was, I don't know what the price was. Let's say it was, $35. And so, I'll buy this hat for $35. And then I got the cash register, and it rang up $20. Because it was on sale, but I didn't know it was on sale. So I paid $20 for the hat. Well, what is that $15, the difference between $20 and $35? Consumer surplus. See, I was willing to pay $35, right? I mean, I took the hat off the rack. I was in the line. I put the hat down. Oh, I want to buy this hat, and I'm willing to pay $35. But they didn't charge me $35. They only charged me $20. So that $15 is what we call consumer surplus. Okay? Now, that brings us to what is producer surplus? The amount by which total revenue from production exceeds total variable cost. See, producer surplus says, well, we're willing to sell and make this much money, but we're making a lot more than that. So what is the difference between the minimum amount of money that we would be willing to accept and the actual amount of money we're making? Well, the difference is what we call producer surplus. See, it's the same concept as consumer surplus, but we're talking about the producer instead of the consumer. Now, what does a consumer and producer surplus look like on the graph? Well, demand and downward slope in demand, we're on slide 45 here. Downward sloping demand curve, upward sloping supply curve, the equilibrium price, or which determines the market price, is $10. Now, above $10, there is some consumer surplus. There are some people that, see, as the price goes up above $10, are there some people that would be willing to, let's say this is hat. Because that's the example I use. Well, if the price is above $10, are there some consumers that say, hey, I'm willing to pay $12 or $14 for this hat? Well, yeah, there are. But as the price goes up, how many of those people are there? Less and less and less. Now, as the price goes up high enough, eventually what's going to happen? Well, eventually we're going to get to the point where there's no one that's willing to buy a hat at that high price, you see? So as the price goes up above $10, well, fewer and fewer people until we get to zero. Well, that purple area between the market price and where demand intersects our vertical curve, that area for this triangle is what we call consumer surplus. Now, producer surplus, see, is area below that. Producer surplus says, well, see, as the price goes down and down and down, the producer's making less and less money. So what happens to the number of producers that are willing to supply as the price goes down? It gets less and less and less. So this area, you know, of what we call producer surplus become less and less and less. Well, but this, all of a sudden we get to $5 and boom, it just stops. It just cuts off there. How come? I mean, what does M represent? Now, it's not given to us here, but M would be where our average variable cost curve intersects. So at point M, our losses exceed our fixed costs, and therefore we will not operate, and therefore there is no supply curve below this point, below point M. See, this is a short run. This is short run analysis. It says a consumer surplus and producer surplus for a competitive market in the short run. And that's the end. So this completes chapter 8.